This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 1035.
It's Thursday, and all through Namibia, it's been scorching this week, and we've got some pretty hot content tonight as well. See what I did there? It's the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and this is Nova 1035. Coming up this evening in the lead story, Agra announced results a few weeks ago with the AGM last week. We talked to Arnold Klein, the CEO of Agra Limited, about their results. Elisa Amapolo, the brand newly minted CEO of Namdia. David Bishop catches up with Elisa in our spotlight. Travis Matthews from the NCCI comes and tells us a little bit about what's going on in the SME space after engagements with the city of Windhoek by the NCCI. Robert McGregor explains why Namibia chose a different route to South Africa in terms of repo rate increases this week, break from the norm that has developed over the last few years. And then Angie Skoltz, in a fascinating story, catches up with Lindiwe Zulu, the South African Minister of Social Development, who was in Namibia recently and spoke to our Ange. So a packed show, but before we get into all of that, let's start out with our business flash briefing.
Growing the economy together. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your Biz News, I'm Charlize Maslengle. British multinational oil and gas company Shell will soon start a three-well exploration and appraisal drilling campaign offshore Namibia centered on its Graff oil and gas discovery. The Bank of Namibia has hiked the repo rate by 50 basis points to 6.75% effective immediately. South African state power utility Eskom has denied claims that it is delaying the state security agency's vetting process for CEO Andre de Reiter and other executives, saying it was trying to complete the process as quickly as possible. And the European Union has threatened Elon Musk's Twitter with a ban unless the billionaire abides by the strict rules on content moderation, setting up a regulatory battle over the future of the social media platform. I'm Charlize Maslengle. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Welcome back to the Business Report. You're on Nova 1035. Time now for our lead story. And our lead story this evening, proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. Joining us in the studio this evening for the lead story is the Chief Executive Officer of Agra Limited, Arnold Klein. Welcome to the show, Arnold.
Thank you very much.
Let's touch on AGM was last week. Results came out at the end of October. So they've been out for a little bit. There's been some consumption on it, and I'm sure you've had some feedback. But overhead results looked fantastic. Just over 100 million Namibia dollars profit. Just tiny, tiny little bit under 2 billion in revenue. Those are pretty good numbers under what are still trying conditions.
That is correct, and we're quite proud of that. And yeah, we tried to get to the 100 million mark, and we exceeded that with on the agro side with the 6 million. So we had 106 million net profit on the agro side and 111, almost 112 million for the agro group with the subsidiaries included. We don't really look at the turnovers, although it does show you the size of the business. But yeah, that was great results, and we're really happy with that.
Where does this growth come from? Is there certain pockets of excellence in the business, or is it overall it's just going well?
Yeah, I think in terms of the net profit, where it comes from is basically improved efficiencies. So we didn't increase gross margins as such because we're a very, very low margin type of business. And you have to be competitive. There are a lot of competitors competing with Agra on different areas. So we've got to be competitive all the time. The only way to achieve that kind of net profits would be through efficiencies, bringing down your costs and managing that very, very carefully, and then focus on the business and expanding your market share. That's the only way to do it.
I mean, you have an interesting business structure in that you're a limited company as opposed to a PTY. Your shares are actively traded, but not on the open exchange. So as a result, as a business, Sam Walton used to say that Walmart were the buying agent for their customers. And out of the old co-op structure, that was largely the rationale, was to be a buying agent. So I suppose what I'm alluding to is it's consistently a balancing act between being profitable but not being too profitable.
Correct. And I can say that because I've been with Agra for quite some time. And in the past, operating as a cooperative, Agra has not really been profitable and really profit-driven. So there was a lot of inefficiencies that was actually allowed within the business. So and people didn't actually work very hard to be price competitive. And the general idea was, as long as stock would be available at a relatively cheap price, that's okay. But we don't really care whether Agra would make profits or not. Whereas we've changed the business model and said, well, we can do all that, but still make profits just by improving efficiencies. And that is where we've actually started doing that and really focusing on the business. And then we converted to a company, like you said, Agra Limited, it is called. It's a public company with limited liability. That took place in 2013. In terms of the business structure, not much has changed in the way that we conduct business. What has changed is now we do have shareholders and not members anymore. And now we can create shareholder wealth in terms of the growth in the shareholder price or the share price for the shareholder. And he gets a very good return on investment if there's a good growth in the share price. And we have declared dividends ever since 2015 as well, constantly. So that is one thing of giving money back to your client base, because most of our shareholders are also clients of Agra. Mm-hmm. And that makes it actually quite nice for a client to know that if he buys from us, they would actually get a return on that again, because they are shareholders.
And it's an interesting space to be in when your customers are your shareholders. It's a different dynamic.
Very, very interesting, because it's like they'd always come to you and say, hey, we pay your salary.
Exactly.
So it's actually quite nice, because you can't ask them for a raise because they wouldn't give it to you. But anyway, but that is interesting, dealing with your customer, but your customer is also your shareholder or your boss. And it's a very interesting dynamic. The nice part about that is you build very, very strong relationships with your customers. And that is actually the business model of Agra, is that we are a relationship kind of business and we like to interact with our business partners, which is our clients.
So just over 3,000 odd shareholders, but clearly a customer base that's far bigger than that. One of the things I've noticed in watching Agra and its communication strategies, it seems to be looking to increase market share and bring new customers into the stores and into the buying chain. Has that been part of the growth?
That has indeed been part of the growth. We would all know that in the past, agriculture was seen as something which is not glamorous. And we try to make Agra more glamorous, but also agriculture more glamorous. Your farming community is aging, but it's very good for us to see younger entrants into the market. And that's very good. And we have to communicate to them as well. So that has been quite a big focus from our side also, to be linked to the younger generation farmers. And that helps quite a lot, but not only on the farming side, but also your city dweller. We reach out to them. We have got different types of businesses, with Ours VetMed focusing on pet supplies, animal medicines and things like that, quite a specialized kind of business. We've got the Rosenthal company focusing on arms, ammunition and all of that. Very, very specialized, very stunning type of shop that you can go to. We've got Safari Den as well, which is outdoor camping, weapons, ammunition, all of that as well. So yes, it's quite a broad spectrum of products that we can offer to the public. And it's not only a farming business anymore. So we cater for a very, very broad spectrum of clients. And that actually makes it more complicated. But that is quite exciting as well.
So agriculture itself is, you're obviously heavily exposed to the agricultural industry, but that itself is an industry that's consistently evolving. We've seen over the last 25 years or so a big shift from family-owned, generational, sort of closed-loop type farming. And we see two big trends. We see a lot of institutional farming taking place, a lot of big balance sheet farming. And we also see the evolving importance of the informal sector and how hard that is to get in front of, just because of, it's not disorganized, it's unorganized is perhaps the way to say it. So perhaps just are those trends evident in Namibia, and do we see different products or different thinking based on that?
Yeah, we do see that in Namibia. So you do have, like you call them, the balance sheet farmers. They're the quite bigger farmers, and also family businesses where they really focus on the business. But you also have your, I would say, traditional commercial farmer, which is like a single person farming on his farm and doing quite a good job of that. But then we have a lot of new entrants from your previously disadvantaged farmers, and whether it's resettled farmers or whether it's farmers that actually bought a farm and now farming commercially in a commercial area. And what is very interesting about that is we've also got a division called Agra Provision, where we do capacity building and training and upskilling of people interested in agriculture. And we've got various different courses. We also have the Agricultural Academy, where you can study for a diploma in a different certain field. So that helps quite a lot in building the capacity in the country. And people in Namibia are hungry for that information. What we do find is your, I would say, traditional commercial farmers, they tend to rather say that we know it all, we've got the experience, but I think they don't realize how much more experience they can gain and how much more knowledge they can gain by exposing themselves to more recent and better information. Whereas your upcoming farmers, they know that they lack the information and the knowledge, and they hunger for that. And that's quite a nice department of ours, that we actually build that capacity within the agricultural sector. And yeah, we do see the results of that. And you can just look at that, especially in the stud market, with your buyers of stud bulls and rams and things like that. It's actually your upcoming farmers. And they are very particular on the quality that they buy, because they know that quality that will take you forward. So that helps.
Now, obviously, another big trend in agriculture worldwide is the advancement of technologies. Drone technology has changed many forms of farming, satellite communications, more access to the internet, more access to information, automated systems, RFID. That evolves rapidly. How does Agra stay in front of those technologies and understand what to bring into the country and whatnot?
That's a very interesting one, because Namibia lags behind when it comes to technology and the advancement in technology. So if you progress too fast, you may lose your customer. So you've got to adapt. So what we've done, that was something that we've planned for quite some time. But for instance, the whole digital auction platform, Agra is known for that. And we've brought it to Namibia and we've excelled in it. So, and it became like a normal feature with all our stud auctions currently. And that is something where we've actually outperformed our opposition by far, because they were far behind us in terms of that. In terms of drone technology and all of that, yes, a couple of farmers do make use of that, but that is not something that has taken Namibia by storm yet. So again, we will adapt as the times allow us to adapt, and it also depends on the market, because it doesn't help for you to lose your customer. You've got to be relevant and you've got to stay focused on what the needs are of your customer.
All right, if we were looking at results, it would be churlish to not mention where they come from. We have now emerged from a 7-year drought, last 2 years, fairly good rains. We had the impact of COVID. We now have the knock-on effects of supply chain shocks, fuel, energy shocks, and so forth and so forth. Yet you guys have produced some sterling results. Do you feel you've fully recovered from the various setbacks over the last 2 years?
I do think so, yes. The one thing that I have to make clear is the only way that you can stay abreast of things is when you're actually proactive. And when COVID hit the world, we realized that it would only be a matter of time and it will hit Namibia as well. So we were extremely proactive. And whenever anything happened in Namibia with the lockdowns and all of that, we had all our protocols in place already. And we actually offered our protocols to the ministries, because they didn't have them in place. And these were adopted from the ones that we've developed. So COVID as such did not have such a big impact on Agra because we were well prepared for it. And we also expanded on our delivery model that we have by telling the farmers, but you don't have to come to farm to town, we will deliver for you on farm. So we had that infrastructure in place already before COVID hit. And we are very fast to adapt to changes. And that is the nice thing about Agra. We are a national company, rooted in Namibia, but yeah, Namibian owned. So we don't have boards and people that we have to report to abroad or in other countries. So we can take very quick decisions and we say, this is what the situation is and we can adapt to that. And yeah, I think that makes us quite flexible and adaptable, and that is what we've done. The one thing in terms of droughts, that is something that will always be there in Namibia. That is, Namibia is a dry country, and we've also learned to adapt to that. So during droughts, you've got your high-moving stock, like your feeds and licks and things like that, that would move very fast. You've got to be competitive because everybody is very price-sensitive then, and then you drop your margins because you've got to sell and you've got to take care of your customer as well. Whereas when it started raining again, then the demand for that slows down. And then you've got other focuses on other products. And we know that market and we know how to adapt to that. So I think that has helped us over the years to adapt quickly and to take advantage of the opportunities that it creates.
So just over 40 years trading in Namibia, by Namibia, for Namibians. But the future is always what's unknown. The past we can talk about forever because we know. What's next? What's still on the horizon? What sort of highlights are you looking forward to in the next year or two?
I think the most important part, and we talk about the 40 years, the one thing that we've got to acknowledge is that I would say the first 25 years, Agra has not really excelled in terms of financial performance at all. And it's only been since 24, 25 that Agra has really excelled in terms of performance. So we could only improve on our branch infrastructure since 2008 onwards. And that's a constant process of doing that. But expansion is extremely important. And the far northern regions still need a lot of Agra branches because we do have branches there, but definitely not enough. So we will expand into the far northern regions, definitely. We have a very strong fuel footprint, but we will further expand on that as well. And then in terms of brick and mortar, since 2014, we've on average spent roughly 47 million per annum in brick and mortar in our whole expansion and growth plan that we have. And that money all goes into investment into Namibia. So all the profits we make, we reinvest in Namibia because we believe in Namibia. It's a good economy. It's a good, stable country. And we love living here. So we will continue doing that. I think there will be a stronger focus also because we basically all the properties that we trade from are Agra-owned properties. And we can still expand on that, and we will also expand on property investment where we can have external tenants as well to grow our market on that side as well. So the legs that Agra basically stand on in terms of our operational business is retail, wholesale, your auction side, the provision, as I said, the capacity building and training side, and then our property business. So that is the business model that we work from.
Business is never done. The results are posted, and immediately the next day you have to pitch up back to work and go and beat them next year.
Absolutely. And their bar just gets raised every time that you perform. So and that is, you can never outperform yourself. And that is where we have this slogan of where we would like to achieve excellence, because excellence, I think, can never be achieved. And that is our drive, is to go for something which is not really achievable, but that you always want to achieve.
Arnold Klein, thank you for joining us on the Business Report. Congratulations on a great set of results.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure from my side as well.
That's Arnold Klein, the Chief Executive Officer of Agra Limited, speaking about results released recently and high acclaim at the AGM for a wonderful set of results as well deserved. That's it for this evening's lead story, and the lead story brought to you, as always, by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 103.5. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
In today's Spotlight feature, we're speaking to current Namdia CEO, Alyssa Amapolo. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to engage.
Let's start right at the start, so to speak. Tell us a bit more about you, where you're from, where you grew up, where you did your schooling.
I describe myself as an ordinary rural Namibian girl who grew up in a Finnish missionary high school, Oshigambo High School. And I came, already migrated to the city in search for education, higher education. I enrolled for an undergraduate program at the University of Namibia, where I studied media studies with focus on corporate communications. And in that process, I also met my first employer, which was heading up the marketing and comms at Namibia Broadcasting Corporation. Thereafter, NBC, which began the beginning of my career, really the early stage of my career, I then moved on to Uncharted Territories, which is in Namibia Global Fund Program. It's a development finance program. I was responsible for stakeholders and communications. And it was really there at the Global Fund Program where I got a wake-up call. I was working with this global expert, BH Holder, and we're doing research in the field. And I was really driving that research from data collection to analysis to report drafting. And it triggered me to say, I can do this for my country, but perhaps I lack the credentials because he's a BH Holder, but he was very fascinated by the himba taking photos. So we can do it. So that triggered me and inspired me to pursue my master's, and I applied to the University of Leeds in the United Kingdom for master's in international comms. It didn't go very well the first year. I didn't have the funding for it. So I had to try second time around and defer my offering. And surprisingly, on the second year, I actually got two scholarships, one for Rotterdam in Holland and one for Leeds, United Kingdom. It was eventually a picky-picky-pocky kind of game. And after speaking to a couple of people, I chose Leeds, United Kingdom, and I then went to study international communication that just looks at doing business in a global setting, looking at globalization. And I think that's really tied very well in the role that I'm in now at Namdia, where we're dealing with about 90% of the international market. I'm currently a doctor of business candidate, going my third year next January.
Sure, there we go. Well, I wanted to touch on the fact that you hold that the Master's of Arts degree in International Communications and the Bachelor of Media Studies. And, you know, now you're running a business. And you've given us a bit of a journey, you know, you ended up marketing in the Global Fund. But, you know, how do you go from studying communications and, you know, not ending up doing my job to actually running a massive company?
I know. I would never have expected it. But I think that was really sort of driven by my exposure. When I came back from the UK, I worked a bit again in the international environment at the Commonwealth in the development finance sector, totally away from the traditional comms. And while I'm in the UK, I really specialize on issues of globalization and trade. So I wanted to make a contribution from a liberalization of the market point of view through, that's how I ended up at the regulator. And that's where I really got my first exposure to the business, because now I'm looking at MTC and telecom financials to be able to charge them a levy so that we can advance the ICT sector. And that then sent me to a business school. I invested, I took a loan, and I went to an accelerated MBA program at London Business School. You don't get a credential, but you do the same course for about a year. And then after, I also invested in a Stanford Seed Transformation Program, which is a De Beers partnership. So I think that's really where my first interface with the diamond industry began, from 2019 onwards.
All right.
Yeah, so it's about scaling and catapulting that skill onto new industries.
Yeah.
I love uncharted territories. And I believe that if I continue to sort of hone my skill, especially on business acumen, which is really what was a missing link in the past. I felt that I was more technically driven. That's why I went to business school, to make sure that I'm fully equipped. And you never know what other industry I could add value after this.
Well, we'll touch on that in a little while. But I wanted to, you know, going to business school because traditionally, you know, the communications, journalism, media people, most of us are scared of numbers. How easy was that transition?
It wasn't easy. But I think because I've been in the business side of things, corporate communications mostly, a PR, corporate affairs, that kind of give you a full spectrum and a 360 degree insight on the business. But I love numbers right now. I always say, give me the income statement, balance sheet and cash flow and we can talk. And that transition, you know, it took me by surprise because I never expected that, you know, I could take a helm of the company. But I always now say, you know, leadership is really about your ability to challenge the status quo and to make a difference. And it's not really cast in stone to say an economist is a better leader than a comms person or an engineer. But I think traditionally we have confined corporate leadership to finance mostly. And I'm now changing that narrative and saying it's leadership can arise from all sort of professions. It's really about that inherent appetite and intrinsic motivation to really impact the boardroom and change the narrative.
Speaking about the boardroom, and I imagine communicating with people there, and your job presumably entails communicating with people all over the world.
Correct.
So how did your original studies, or how do your original studies help you in your day-to-day running of Namdia?
It's very pivotal because my first degree in media studies and corporate communications about stakeholders management. Now, as you understand, the diamond value chain is very ethically sensitive. So it's about sustainability. That comes in very handy. Global communications, again, with all the global clients, our site holders are basically from Israel, Antwerp, Dubai, India, and Namibia. So that in the cultural context, you know, what they call cultural practices within the hierarchy of power within different cultures. For example, in India, you have the different caste system. It really comes in handy. But the business side of it, also now being able to take day-to-day business decision, are we sustainable? You know, how much do we need to implement this innovative solution, for example, on sale and online auctions and trading, so we can get more increased transparency and get better value for our diamonds. It's all coming together surprisingly. And it's really humbling to see that, you know, whatever you do earlier on in your career, somehow it's chatting you to a path and that only you know it's unprecedented.
Speaking of cultural differences, do you find it difficult being a woman in this setting and in this industry?
Well, I was saying the other day that, you know, diamond industry is much more open and much more inclusive, maybe because of the ethical sensitivity and sustainability towards it, and also the whole narrative of ESG that is emerging. I find it very, very welcoming. I've been mostly in male-dominated industry, telecom infrastructure. I really should commend the diamond industry. They've been very intentional and deliberate to include women. Of course, the gender dynamics around the inequity in earnings between women and men, that's where the work needs to be done. But I've really felt welcome and supported across the entire ecosystem, both on the upstream, midstream, and also downstream.
Okay. You're clearly doing something right because you've been described as a trendsetter in the industry. What do you think gave rise to the accolade? What is it that you've done that is trendsetting?
Well, I've always sort of challenged myself to do unconventional things, you know, and really my risk appetite is very high. Some may recall that I was also the first licensee and curator for TEDx in Namibia, which we went on to mentor TEDx, Wakamon, TEDx UNAM, and a few others. I was also one of those few people who decided to pack up their life in 22-kilogram bag and give up their accessory polo and go and study when everybody was still, you know, striving to follow the traditional norm of you finish undergrad, you get a husband, you get married, you know, and really, you know, always challenging the status quo and challenging norms, but also being innovative and being impact driven. I think if we all put our national agenda at the center of our heart and the difference that we can make by deploying our skills, I think that's really where the biggest value is for every Namibian to make a contribution. I'm very patriotic. I've worked in other markets like in London, as Eli alluded to, and I've seen what potential lies ahead if you just deploy your skills more effectively in your economy. So I really wanted to contribute to economic transformation, but more so really turning around the narrative of non-performance from commercial public enterprises where the order of the day is bailout, to saying that if we run this business ethically, sustainably, we can really make a difference in the lives of all Namibians.
Speaking of trends, let's pause quickly to find out what trends influence your musical taste. So every week we ask our spotlight guests to choose their favorite song for us. What have you chosen for us and why?
Wow, I love techno music, which is a mixture of what now? I know it originates from Nigeria, but I particularly like artists like Two Square, Davido's, Bruna Boys, but I also like a bit of Afrocentric music. The one that I particularly chose is No Woman, No Cry by Bob Marley, because it really speaks to the true essence of a woman in an evolving world, especially in a liberalized community where gender issues, patriarchy, are at the center of our day-to-day conversation, to make sure that a girl child's voice is heard and there's space for her to penetrate and to excel. So No Woman, No Cry.
Over, over, over.
back to today's Spotlight feature. We're currently speaking to Namdia CEO Elissa Amopolo. And having just learned something personal and, I must say, pretty deep, the message behind your song choice, let's stick with digging into that. What's your philosophy that you choose to live your life by? And do you have a so-called five-year or 10-year goal?
Well, yes, we all have those. I mean, particularly for me, it's really around failing forward. I always believe, you know, the lower you fall, the higher you bounce. So that just means that we should never shy away from challenges and exploring uncharted territories and out of fear of failing. Mm. You can fail forward and fail fast. That's really my philosophy. It's better to try. They always say that the person who drives, there's a philosophy or adage that says that the one person who never leaves the garage will never learn how to drive. Mm-hmm. So go out there, take the risk, learn, and fail fast and fail forward. Because if you hit your lowest, you always bounce so high.
You've spoken about being an alumni of the London Business School, the Air Emerging Leaders Program, and the Stanford Seed Program. And like you said, you're a Doctor of Business candidate with the Namibian Business School. So you clearly like learning. Are there any plans for other courses or qualifications in the future?
Yes, now that I've entered, the most world beautiful industry, if we may say so, the girl's best friend, the diamond industry, it's to learn the art of trade. It's to really deepen my knowledge on the four C's, your cut, your clarity, your color, so that we could continue to influence the mandate of price discovery that Namdia is established to do. You know, we're trying to get better values for our diamonds, the most highly sought after, which has the best gem quality. The Namibian diamonds are really the most beautiful in the world and everybody wants to get a piece of it. But we are saying that it should come at better value, better margin, so that we can really inculcate and sort of roll those yields into our economy so that ordinary Namibians can really start to enjoy the benefits of their natural resources. So it's really deepening my expertise on the four C's and evaluation of diamonds and continuing to learn on a day-to-day basis because it's a very rapidly evolving industry. It fluctuates very fast. It has a lot of dynamics around it. Market outlook also plays factors. And really being able to position and differentiate Namibian diamonds from all others around the world and making sure that how we position it, there's a space for it in the global value chain. And that even you as a Namibian, when you want to engage or propose, that you take ownership of that brand and you become the brand ambassador. I think if you go around now and you just ask 20 people in the room, where is your diamond from? It's unlikely that you'll not be able to find somebody saying, oh, I engage with a Namibian diamond. Mm. So also really driving downstream beneficiation so we can elevate our business model from just being a midstream rough diamond trader to also adding value to our rough stones through polished. And I think you may have seen the landmark event of Ewumbo Star, which is just one of the initiatives to catapult our model. Mm. So it's really honing my skills in that respect so we can create better and sustainable value for our diamonds.
Lastly, it sounds pretty much like your life has taken the path that it was meant to take. Aww. But having started off studying communications and media studies, if your life had taken a different path, where would you have liked to see yourself today? What was your childhood dream job?
You know, I was so into technology. And I think that came because of the exposure to a fully fledged English lab at the high school, at the former Finnish Missionary High School, Shigambo High School, where I was, which was donated by the US. I think it was by Microsoft. So already when I was just a teenager, e-learning and remote learning was already a reality. By then, we were not calling it e-learning or remote learning until the pandemic. So I was very fascinated by that. I wanted to understand how you can use technology to reach the masses. And I think I eventually gradually moved into media studies. So that would have been that. And another one to be an educator. My parents are both retired educators. And I think the apple does not fall too far from the tree. I love to teach.
Well, I mean, there's always the chance.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, when I retire, I could end up in academia, teaching at business schools, and really just inculcating the experience that I've drawn from all walks of life and the different career interface that I've had to translate that knowledge to the next generation of leaders.
Thank you so much. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I doubt that it's the last we'll hear of you.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm really humbled, and I'd like to thank all the listeners for their time.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The BizNews Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors. M&Z Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Contact M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive or visit the M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything. Welcome back to the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. We turn our attention now to local business, SME development. The Namibia Chamber of Commerce and Industry and the City of Windhoek held their 6th Windhoek Mayoral Business Forum in Windhoek. The Windhoek Mayoral Business Forum was established to strengthen linkages between the municipality council and the business community within the city and for coherence in the planning and development of the city as well in a way that obviously benefits business. We're joined now by Travis Matthews, the SME officer from the NCCI. Travis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about the forum quickly. It was held last week. It's traditionally been every 6 months or so. COVID's obviously had some disruptions, so it's been a year since the last forum. Just give us an idea of the value of a forum like this where businesses would come together with a city and have a chat about how things are going.
Sure. So, one, again, thank you so much for having us here. We really appreciate the coverage that your team has for NCCI. Essentially, what this event does is it creates linkages between the municipality and the business community. We are working to strengthen the way that business is done within Namibia. And so within the Windhoek Mayoral Business Forum, we bring together Her Worship the Mayor, our CEO from NCCI, members of the business community, and try to bring up issues that surround the business community within the municipality. So that could be a whole host of issues, a whole host of things that are successes, potentially some challenges. We really don't want to focus on everything that's happening that is not good. We want to really applaud and congratulate the city for the work that they're doing to try to make doing business in Windhoek as easy as and fruitful as possible.
Okay, so I'm going to chuck you a tough question, and I appreciate you're going to have an angle on the answer, but how business-friendly is the city of Windhoek in general? What has been your experience?
So I've been with the NCCI at the head office now for a year, and you could probably tell from my accent that I'm a foreigner, so I come into the city not having lived here my whole life. And from my experience being here for the last 5 years in Windhoek, I think that the city does an incredible job of trying to make sure that the way of doing business is done easier, better, and more conducive for the business environment. Of course, there's challenges and there's ways that we can always improve, and that's what this forum is intended to do.
Okay. So your 6th engagement from the NCCI's perspective over a number of years.
It began in 2016.
Okay. So we've got a good run-up at this question then. What's come out of this forum that you can definitively point to and say here are initiatives or ideas or rule changes or, you know, just things that are happening as a result of this sort of conversation?
Sure. So I'd like to focus in on where my experience has been. Clearly, there's been a variety of developments that have happened from the forum. But the major ones that took place between the last 2 years were discussions on building permits and on fitness certificates. I can historically point to the fact that perhaps fitness certificates weren't done in the most conducive way. We have stories of businesses that wait months for that certificate to come through, and they can't really operate without it. Whereas the city now is making a claim that they can, from complete application to producing the certificate in like 5 business days. So that is a massive development from what had historically taken place. And then we have plenty of discussions last year and this year on building permits and how those are more effectively distributed from the city's office. So those would be two points that I can definitely point to that have been very much addressed through these forums, as well as a variety of other issues that would have been tabled at this event.
Okay. So typically at the sort of bilateral type level, there's some things that you'd be saying, hey guys, this is where we need help with. But there'd also surely be some things from their perspective that they're saying, look, this is you guys need to help us with, especially with SMEs who often don't have the capacity, potentially the competence or the experience to truly follow what is sometimes quite a bureaucratic and administrative system. So what are the issues that the city raises with you guys that you take back to your constituents?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, let's point back to the certificates of origin. I'm not certificates of origin, the fitness certificates. It'll often happen that someone turns in an application, expects that they're going to receive it within that certain time frame, but their application's incomplete for whatever reason. They're missing various documents or various clauses that aren't really completed in the application. So that's where the city would ask the NCCI to step in and say, anybody that's coming to us for the fitness certificate issue, they're mentioning that it's not being processed in the right time, or they're having some issues working with the city, they can come to the NCCI and we sort those out first before we take it back to the city. They really like this idea within the city of Windhoek of speaking towards a unified voice. And that's what NCCI's one of our major values is if someone's having an issue, instead of going straight to the city and perhaps having to go up the chain of command, they can come directly to the NCCI saying, hey, you know, there's this issue that I'm faced with the city. My documents aren't being processed in the right time frame. Whatever else is happening within my business that's just not seeming to go well, they can come to us. We speak with a unified voice, speak directly to their business development team, and we can sort those issues out.
So let's talk a little bit about the Chamber of Commerce. Now, traditionally, certainly what's happened in lots of places around the world is changes of commerce have really had to sort of reposition the role they play in the value chain. With the advent of technology and email and WhatsApp and, you know, multiple ways to reach people and network and Facebook and LinkedIn, Chambers of Commerce, the traditional role they played, which was largely networking and then also trying to sort of figure out a unified voice of business, has been disintermediated to some extent. So how does the Namibia Chamber of Commerce and Industry see its role in the private sector?
Sure. So I guess I could take when I explain what the chamber does in the most simplified form, we have two different divisions. We have a policy division and a programming division. And the policy division is likely the one that's creating the most value to businesses. It is clear, at least in my opinion, within the chamber role, that every single business across the country has benefited from the work that the chamber is doing in the policy side. We just recently helped out with NAMRA in the rewriting of the Certificate of Good Standing Act that's going to come into play next year. That's something that affects every business. And we interview our members in the business community for their inputs. And then we write our reports and submit those to the agencies that are helping with that legislation. So anybody that wants a voice in policy likely would want to be a member of the chamber because they have a direct impact into those things, as opposed to trying to bark up those trees themselves, which might have varying levels of success. And then on the programming side, yeah, to your point about the networking and the communication, I still think that's a massive piece of what we do. So within my role, I could break down our programming into 3 different buckets. That would be in networking, programming, and training, and connecting folks to resources that are within those realms. So perhaps we're not actually doing that specific training program, but we partner with NAMRA, for example, on these excise and tax related programs that they're doing across the country. We aren't necessarily doing the programs Know to Grow that NIPDB is doing, but we partner with them and we massively try to mobilize our community to attend their programming. And they do the same for us as well. So the person that says it's really tough to find information in Namibia, I want to give value to that point. However, they're just following the wrong sources. Okay. If they were to follow NCC on Facebook, on LinkedIn, they follow NIPDB and NAMRA and BIPA, there's an abundance of information out there that is free, accessible to everybody if you're tapped into the right resources.
We hear from a lot of economists, politicians, bureaucrats, SME is the future of the economy. This is how we create employment. This is how we lift the Namibian economy. In your role, you would have a focus on that particular segment, but that segment also has some peculiar or unique challenges, and that's largely down to the small size of the companies you're working with, the vulnerability to volatility, rules, and also just lack of resource more often than not. How does the NCCI see themselves tackling the SME environment specifically over the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I think in any global economy, SMEs are the backbone of the economy, as you'd hear all across the board. We have, let's say, 80 to 90% of our operating budget comes from our large corporate members, but 80, 90% of our membership is SMEs. So we are using what we can from our large institutions that are helping fund our operations to support those businesses. And that could be in a number of ways. You know, on the programming side, again, I mentioned we do networking, training, and communication. And all of those are surrounded by providing support to SMEs. In the last 2 weeks, we had two events with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, which directly ties back into how SMEs are able to access the African market. So we're trying to create opportunities and resources for these people to come in, educate themselves, get the capacity building that they need to then advance themselves as they wish. And along those lines, networking within domestically as well. So if we have SMEs here that want to tap into the large corporate ecosystem, we have those channels available for those people to access those businesses also.
We've recently seen the demise of Startup Namibia, which seemed like a really good initiative to, you know, help seed that kind of very first sets of stages that SMEs must take, which is to get going. I mean, that seems to indicate there's quite a lot of headwind for small businesses in Namibia. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I think that, at least in my role, and maybe I see things through a different lens, I think the resources for SMEs here are abundant. I think that someone with a good idea, good work ethic, a little bit of grit, has ample opportunities to advance their business within the ecosystems that exist here currently. Whether that is Startup Namibia through GIZ, KAS, NCCI, NIPDB has brilliant SME resources. And I would be the person to say that all of us are working together. I don't feel like I'm in competition with any of these organizations. We're all trying to achieve the same goal.
Okay. And how positive are you over the next 5 or 10 years that it is in fact possible to create this wave of SME, and are we seeing progress? Are things happening in a positive way?
I think that those businesses that are keyed into what's happening with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area are one giant step ahead than you would have been maybe 5 years ago. Having access to the entire African market for manufacturing, for services, for tourism. Of course, there's definitely a lot of non-tariff challenges that we're going to hear as kind of the key in all these events, these non-tariff barriers that people are faced with. So as we tackle those, I think there's a lot of opportunity. Just this year, NCCI hosted the Angola Business Forum in Oshikongo, and we hosted the Zambia Business Forum in Swakopmund just last month. The Angola one was in May, and we laid out, hey, these are the challenges that we face with when we're trying to do trade across the border. Some of them are laughable, like the borders close at different times. Your truck could sit there at the border all night long and then you can't cross, and banking systems not communicating with each other, and various visa issues. And I can see within just a short time that I've been here at the NCCI head office that there's massive progress being made in those directions. Again, whether or not you're a member of the chamber or not, a lot of this work is done behind the scenes and will absolutely create this ecosystem that's going to be beneficial in the next few years.
Right. So I run a small business or I'm a startup or I'm an established business and I haven't really heard of the NCCI before. How do how do members or prospective members reach out to you, and what's the process of getting involved?
We would love to have that conversation. I think that you would not be alone if that's your sentiment. We've been in the country since independence, and so we're very well established. We're recognized by the State House. We are the within the ministries and within our networks, we're the premier voice of Business Namibia. So we speak on behalf of businesses. So if you want to find out who we are, pop by our office. We're located here in Windhoek. You can contact us at 061-228-8809. Our email is nccinfo@ncci.org.na. Or you just find us online, ncci.org.na, and you can pop by our office, meet with us anytime. We have an open door policy, and we could talk to you about how we can benefit and serve your business in the future.
Travis Matthews, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for giving us an update, and good luck with the work you do. If you do run a business, you manage a business, and you're stuck, or you need help, the NCCI is there. You can go Google them, go get in contact, and you've heard it from the horse's mouth. There's ample resource. There's no reason to sit around the briar fires complaining. Reach out and get some help. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Business Report.
That's great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
The BizNews Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
Welcome back to the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. And time now for our Market Watch. And an interesting turn of events this week, and pretty unexpected as well. The Bank of Namibia has decided to increase the repo rate by only 50 basis points. That's to 6.75%. We're joined to try and explain what is going on here by Cirrus Capital economist Robert McGregor. Robert, welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
We do have to, full disclosure, say Robert is sitting down because he does have a sore ankle. And he had to climb up a bunch of stairs to get you. So thank you for your commitment to the task, Robert.
No, happy to be here.
All right. So the Bank of Namibia says, we're not following South Africa anymore. We're going to do our own thing. Just perhaps explain to us, under normal circumstances, Namibia is typically a couple of weeks behind the South African interest rate announcements and has typically followed the same policy, 0.25% or 25 basis points is not an enormous arbitrage to sit with, but it does create that environment. So tell us a little bit about potentially, let's start off with why does Namibia typically follow lockstep with South African interest rates?
So typically Namibia doesn't have to entirely follow South African monetary policy. Effectively, this is something that we refer to as the impossible trinity. So effectively, a country can only have two of three things. So if you plot it on a triangle, you can only have two of the points. That would be independent monetary policy, so a central bank that can truly set its own monetary policy, which we don't fully have, because on the other side, we have a fixed exchange rate and we have the free movement of capital. So it's easy to take capital in and out of the country. Our exchange rate is pegged at 1-to-1 to the rand, and that means we can't truly have independent monetary policy, because we can't, theoretically, we can't deviate to the downside of South African monetary policy. So we can always be higher, but theoretically, because of that, we can't be lower. And to try and sort of simplify it, it's because what happens is if you've got lower interest rates in Namibia than South Africa, you're effectively incentivizing money to flow out to South Africa because they attract higher rates there, right? So you typically want to earn a higher return. If South Africa is offering better rates than Namibia, you take your money to South Africa. What that does then is that causes foreign currency to flow out of the country. And that then puts the peg into question. So broadly, not in this instance right now, but what happens is if you've got foreign currency flowing out, you reduce your stock of international reserves. And if you listen to the monetary policy announcements and read the statements, they talk about our international reserve position quite regularly. And so effectively, what then happens is you've got these outflows of hard currency, it reduces your reserve position. And in order to maintain the currency peg that we have with the rand, we need to maintain a minimum level of reserves as well to guarantee that peg. If we go below a certain level on the international reserves, the South African Reserve Bank will say, listen, we don't feel comfortable anymore. We no longer want to guarantee the one-to-one relationship with the Namibia dollar.
Perhaps just, one of the tenets of that is common currency. We are pegged with Eswatini, Lesotho, South Africa, and the Namibian dollar are all effectively the same currency from a practical perspective. And as a result, any difference in interest rate means you can get the same thing cheaper somewhere else, effectively, or you get a better return somewhere else for the same thing. So the flip side of interest rates is always, of course, debt. And the contra would potentially also then be true is that it now becomes cheaper to make debt in Namibia and deploy that capital somewhere else. Is that a good thing?
Well, potentially. So theoretically, you might then be able to get cheaper debt in Namibia than in South Africa. I mean, I'm not sure how easy it is as a non-Namibian to take up debt with a bank here. But if you're looking to take up debt and deploy it elsewhere, again, that affects the reserve position, right? Because you're taking that money out of the country, you're reducing the hard currency reserves again.
But in the long term, theoretically, you're increasing the returns off that debt.
You're
creating a better market for that debt.
If that money comes back into the country, sure. But I mean, again, the reserve position, you need to maintain it at all times, not in the long term, but not the short term. So that is where the challenge is posed. But I mean, if you look historically, this isn't the first time Namibia has deviated somewhat to the downside. If you go back to the early 2000s, you can see that there were periods where the South African Reserve Bank had interest rates several times higher than what Namibia's were. So you know, there were a couple of hikes above us, and Namibia maintained its interest rate. It's only really since the global financial crisis around 2008, 2009, that we've been moving much more in lockstep with the Reserve Bank. But you can see that subsequently to then, we've also issued 2 Eurobonds. The reserve position was built up a lot more. But I think overall, I mean, the core focus is to maintain that reserve position. A 25 basis points difference over the near term doesn't make that much of a difference, right? So the South African Reserve Bank will meet again in January, where they will decide. We'll meet again, I think the date is the 14th of February, where Namibia will make its announcements, its announcement on the repo rate again. And so, 25 basis points difference over the short term isn't going to be that material. It's not going to have that large an impact on our reserve position.
So let's perhaps just try and unpack why they would do it. There's always this perceived criticism of Namibia for just doing whatever South Africa does, and it feels like there might be a little bit of that in the mix. Because it would be easy to just match monetary policy, right? That would be a simple thing to do and relatively risk-free. Creating a lower interest rate does create this little dynamic, potentially. It doesn't seem to be much upside in it from the perspective you're speaking about. Obviously, from a consumer perspective, this feels good, but 25 basis points doesn't really cut the mustard in changing the economic trajectory of the country. Is it the start of a new way of thinking about our monetary policy, or is this just perhaps a little bit of politicking in the short term?
I think it's simply just, if we look at the South African Reserve Bank's monetary policy, they've been hiking very aggressively. They've been largely following actually what we've seen in the US. So they've largely been following the Fed hikes. The question is as to sort of how accurate is South Africa's monetary policy for their economic environment at this stage. My thinking is somewhat different to what the SARB seems to be putting forward, at least. My view is that the Fed is hiking aggressively because they're facing a large inflation challenge. I mean, inflation there is at multi-decade highs in the US. And that is, to some extent, supply-driven, but a large proportion of that is demand-driven. That's because you had low interest rates, effectively free money. Government was handing out money to people during the pandemic, and you, sort of that causes high inflation.
Quantitative easing, right?
Exactly.
So just printing it.
All of these basically eventually do result in high inflation at some stage. And so the US needs to combat that with high interest rates, right? You make money more expensive. People can't afford to spend as much anymore. Your economics 101 description of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. If you reduce the amount of money chasing those goods, effectively your price your price increases at least should be less aggressive. In South Africa and Namibia, the dynamic is very different. Our inflation is not that much demand-driven. It's more supply-driven, right? It's prices that we get on the international market, so fuel is the largest extent. Or, I mean, in South Africa, to a large extent, it's administered prices like the Eskom tariffs. So it's not really demand-driven, it's supply-driven. The challenge with using interest rates to combat that is interest rates are a demand-side tool, right? You weaken demand in the economy. The economy in Namibia and South Africa is still relatively weak, especially after the last 2 or 3 years we've had. And so using a demand side tool to address a supply side challenge is going to have unwanted side effects. And we see that on affordability for households. You know, that's the big challenge. So you put households and effectively growth under a lot of pressure, because from a GDP perspective, households are the single largest component on that side of the calculation. And so that's the downside. And I think that's where the Bank of Namibia's Monetary Policy Committee has decided, all right, we can maintain a 25 basis points difference to the downside for the next 2-3 months without an issue. The reserve position is sufficient to account for that. And we don't want to put the full impact of a 75 basis points hike through now. The economy is still relatively weak. Credit uptake is still quite weak in the country. So it's better than it was last year or the year before, but overall it still remains quite weak. And so I think that's why they're sort of trying to balance a bit more the inflationary and South African sort of pressures to rise or to hike, but not sort of make it as dramatic or as adverse for the domestic economy.
Okay. But as you say, it doesn't really make a big difference in the short term. So is this potentially a departure in how we've seen things happen over the last few years, or is it, do you think it'll just be, we'll sort of meet them on the way down again?
I think more of the latter. So, I mean, I don't expect interest rates are going to be increasing as dramatically from next year. I think we're seeing inflation starting to cool in a lot of the developed markets, and that's really what's been driving the interest rate hikes here as well. I think the inflation or the interest rates might hang around these levels for a bit longer than a lot of people anticipated, but the direction or the pace of that increase will slow. And so I think we'll likely look to rather not increase too aggressively, maybe sort of meet them on their way down again.
So you were talking about supply side issues, chief amongst them at the moment, that's really hurting consumers, the price of fuel.
Yeah.
We've seen oil drop down now to in the low 80s. Where it was above 100. We haven't seen any real impact at the pumps. Do we expect any relief in the short to medium term on fuel?
So there's a lot of challenges on the fuel prices. The global price is one of the big components, obviously, and we have seen that come down quite a bit over the last few months. I mean, if I look at the average rand price of oil now, for the average for this month so far compared to last month is about 100 rand a barrel cheaper, which does help. We've seen a dramatic strengthening of the rand this month as well. So the big challenge is in previous months where the oil prices have come down, the rand has been incredibly weak, or rather the US dollar has been very strong. And that's offset a lot of those benefits. So we are seeing low oil prices now, stronger rand now, which is quite beneficial, although the recent drama with the president of South Africa is causing the rand to shoot out again. And that poses another challenge. But what we've really seen driving up fuel prices to a large extent as well is what's referred to as crack spread. So that's the cost of refining your oil into petrol or diesel. And globally, there's been a large shortage of capacity for that refining capability. So we've seen refineries in other parts of the world either close down or have so lots of them have had explosions or fires, which has shut them down for quite a while. South Africa's refineries are all busy closing down effectively, so they're also becoming an entire sort of full net importer of refined products, and that's really what's been driving up the prices to a large extent. So we're slowly starting to see refining capacity come back. I think it was Kuwait just opened one of the world's largest refineries, and that's going to slowly be building up capacity over the next few months, and that should see those refining margins slowly coming down, which then should also start seeing the global price of diesel and petrol specifically starting to come down a bit more as well.
All right. So what we're hoping for the new year would be Russia goes home, takes its football and goes home. British politics just calms down a little bit. Joe Biden remembers what day of the week it is and convinces everyone he's still in charge. And in South Africa, we see some sort of return to normalcy in politics there, which these are all pretty vain hopes.
Yeah.
But that's really, to some extent, what we're feeling the impact of is this incredibly volatile international space as well.
Definitely. And unfortunately, in most of these things, we're price takers, right? So food prices and fuel prices to a large extent, and that's really what's been hitting consumers the most at the moment.
All right. I just want to, that economic term, again, Robert, you said it very quickly, but I seem to think you said crack spread.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll dig into more of that later. Who said economists don't have a sense of humor? Robert McGregor, economist from Ceres Capital, joining us to talk about the difference in monetary policy now being exercised by the Bank of Namibia. South Africa hiked
up the repo rate by 75 basis points. Namibia deciding to go for 50. A little bit of relief for the consumer. That's it for this evening's Market Watch on the Business Report.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 103.5.
Moving on now, while in Namibia, Angie Skoltz spoke to the South African Minister of Social Development, Lindiwe Zulu, about social benefits in both countries.
If you compare our Namibian social development landscape with South Africa, what would you say can be the biggest improvement that Namibians should consider, taking into account the state of our social issues?
Well, it's the state of the people that the Department of Social Development in the South African context speaks about, because social development is about improving the lives of our people, but particularly those that are marginalized in our communities, but also those who are vulnerable. And what do we talk about people who are vulnerable? It's people who don't have jobs, it's people who have got no infrastructure within the places where they live, is people who can't easily access services such as hospitals, clinics, schools, and all. So when we talk about vulnerable people in the South African context, our department focuses on that. And recently, as you all are aware, well, of the fact that we were hit by COVID-19, which really devastated a lot of our communities, and many people even lost their jobs because the jobs were lost. And also our focus from a South African perspective is how do we help our people lift them up from poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And I think those are the issues that are also faced by Namibia. And therefore, it's important for us to share the experiences of what is it that we are doing as government to lift the state of our people to just making it a better life for them.
Minister Zulu, what advice and wisdom has South Africa learned in the past that Namibians can learn from and implement regarding those issues?
We have an existing bilateral engagement with Namibia. So it's not just from a party-to-party level. We have bilateral engagements which focus on our economies, focus on our political space, focuses on our international, the role of SADC as a region, but also focuses on the African Union. We have very good working relationship with Namibia because of historical reasons, but also because we are almost like one people, if I may say. We all belong to the Southern African region.
What sector of the social spectrum would you say that Namibian government should focus on first as far as the social dilemmas in Namibia is concerned?
Our economies are economies that have been struggling since 2008, actually, when we had the global financial crisis. Our economies were affected by that. Then our economies have been badly affected by COVID-19. Our economies also are affected by global challenges, whether it's the climate change and what we need to do because of the climate change, whether it's the war now that is ongoing between Russia and the Ukraine, food prices are going up, oil prices are going up. So we are facing the same problems, but the good thing is that as nations that are neighbors, that are close to each other, as people that have also gone through the same problem of being colonized, of being marginalized, so we face the same problems and we need to then share how we deal with those issues, learning from each other. You know, learning is not a one-way process. We will learn from how Namibia, because remember, Namibia got its independence before us, and they've been in government longer than we have been in government as the African National Congress. So learning is a two-way process. We need to learn from each other of good practices that we can learn from each other in terms of ensuring that we just build our economies for the benefit of our people, not for ourselves.
You were talking about we both face economic crises, unemployment at the moment. What can governments do to change this?
Well, the first and most important thing is we need to focus on our macroeconomic development and what are the industries that we can improve that would fast track economic development. I mean, you talk about issues of agriculture, for instance. We must focus on agriculture. In South Africa, something that has been bringing more financial resources into the coffers of government has been the mining sector as well as the finance sector. So our focus should be on the sectors that have got the potential to grow our economies.
If you could leave one message of encouragement for your counterparts in Namibia, what would that be?
The struggle continues for us to change the lives of our people. The struggle continues for ensuring that the economy of our countries also benefits, especially those that have been excluded from economy. So those are the issues that I can leave to say there's a new leadership that's going to be coming in, and that leadership, I am 100% sure, they will be building on what the other leaders have been building from a point of view of building the organization called SWAPO, sustaining it, and ensuring that it grows from strength to strength, and ensuring that it has got true cadres who are members of the party, not for themselves, but for the sake of ensuring that that revolution that we started, that revolution of change, must continue. And we need to strengthen even our own relationship between our governments.
Thank you, Minister Zulu. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. The trading of Trustco shares has been suspended on the JSE after a court dismissed its appeal against a finding that it wasn't properly complying with accounting standards. The industrial action at Cheetah Cement Factory outside Otjiwarongo came to an end on Monday when the employees and management of the company signed a new wage agreement. The Institute for Public Policy Research launched its new paper, After Fish Rot, The Urgent Need for Transparency and Accountability, calling for the publication of all fishing rights, licenses, and quota details, inclusive of beneficial ownership information. The Development Bank of Namibia launched its business rescue program for qualifying businesses financed by the bank as a possible alternative to liquidation. And Deputy Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emma Theophilus, says that African countries need to work together in synergy in the area of information and communication technology, as this will maximize development and improve the lives of citizens. At COP27, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and President Hage Geingob signed a Memorandum of Understanding which aims to ensure the development of a secure and sustainable supply of raw materials, refined materials, and renewable hydrogen, while Geingob separately accused wealthy nations of not being honest when talking about the fight against climate change, describing the world's largest polluters as criminals and the world's poorer nations as their victims. A total of 593 million euros, or about 10.6 billion Namibia dollars, was, though, pledged to Namibia in the form of grants and concessionary loans. Delegates at the climate summit did also agree to put the delicate issue of whether rich nations should compensate poor nations most vulnerable to climate change on the formal agenda for the first time. At the plenary opening of the summit, COP27 President Sameh Sukri said such discussions were needed to address gaps in responding to losses and damage caused by climate change.
Inclusion of this agenda reflects a sense of solidarity and empathy with the suffering of the victims of climate-induced disasters. And to this end, we all owe a debt of gratitude to activists and civil society organizations who have persistently demanded a space to discuss funding for loss and damage, and thus provided the impetus needed to bring this matter forward.
In other news, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa is being investigated by a Section 89 parliamentary panel, which is considering whether he has a case to answer regarding the theft of foreign currency from his Palapala game farm in 2020. Staying in the country, public servants are on strike, with the Public Servants Association calling for a 6.5% salary increase and the Congress of South African Trade Union Affiliates demanding a whopping 10%, while the South African government is, however, refusing to budge from its offer of 3%. Botswana launched its second national risk assessment on money laundering, terrorism financing, and proliferation financing in the hope it will assist the country in meeting international standards and avoid being grey-listed. And following mass layoffs at Twitter, Meta, which owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, has announced that it will cut 13% of its workforce, or about 11,000 jobs.
The Business Report.
Another packed edition of The Business Report. Thank you for making us Namibia's leading business show. Thanks to our team, Angie Schultz, David Bishop, Raymond Zeevelt, our technical producer, for putting together some fascinating stories this week. Thanks to our guests, Robert McGregor, Travis Matthews, Elisa Mapolo, and Arnold Klein for joining us on the show, as well as the South African Minister of Social Development, the Honourable Lindiwe Zulu. Mostly, thanks to you for listening. And make sure you stay in touch on Twitter. You can check out this episode and all of our previous episodes wherever you find your favorite podcasts on Android and Apple. And if all of that fails, you can go to nova.com.na, go to the podcast tab, and either listen or download for later listening there. So this show and all of our others available to you anytime you want it. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Christmas is coming. I can hear the sleigh bells faintly in the background.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Strubel and produced by Angie Schultz and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.